toss in here on a Sunday afternoon. Happy Easter to all that celebrate. Steven Strom, Kyle Seeloff, Jeff Nelson. We're long tossing, and I'm so glad it's back. It was one of my favorite things we did last year, fellas. Nelly, what was the worst start that you ever got out to for your team?
1998. I believe, you know, that's the one I can remember.
Ended up being a pretty good team.
It was probably the best team in baseball ever.
Ever.
I would say ever, because we won 125 games that year. We were 125-50. We won 114 during the year, and this was after 1997, where we lost in the division series. We were 0-4 to start the season. Got swept in Anaheim against the Angels, went to Oakland, lost the first day, and the New York papers wanted to fire Joe Torre. And the next thing you know, we won our first game and never looked back.
What was the morale of the clubhouse? Or were you guys just so, you know, veteran at that point? There was no panic or not even a word about 0-4, 0-3, whatever it was.
No, it wasn't a big deal. Obviously, you know, you don't want to start that way. But, you know, Joe Torre was such a great manager and a very calming manager. Then he had confidence in everyone. You just had to get over the media of New York, Mr. Steinbrenner, the owner, and also the fans of New York. So they're the ones that you have to, I guess, put on the back burner and say, hey, you know, this stuff happens and you can turn it around. So obviously that happened. I mean, we did that year. We did things that teams never ever have done before, as far as clinching.
Yep.
You know, we were number one in pitching, number one in offense, number one in so many offensive categories. And arguably, I know I'm biased, but arguably it could be the best team ever.
So I'm looking at the schedule in 1998. You dropped the first three to the Angels twice and then the Athletics. It's weird. You only played a two-game set with the Angels.
Kyle, isn't that what I just said?
Yes,
and
you
then,
did. Yes.
Well, I'm going through the schedule, and then you won
one, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight.
Then you rattled off eight in a row. Did you say that too?
I did not. I didn't realize.
I just want to regurgitate.
I only remember the way we started.
Yeah. So anyway, you guys ended up going on an eight-game win streak after the first six games. Hopefully this happens here today. But I guess what my takeaway was, I was thinking about this last night. If guys like Luis Arraez and, you know, Jazz has been, you know, up and down for through the first three games, De La Cruz. But I think this starts with Arraez. And if Arraez can get going here this afternoon, we're recording on a Sunday, if he was going and Jazz was going and Bell was going and the offense was clicking and we were still losing, then I would be a little bit more in panic. But I think, you know, you got to let this thing kind of take its time. And I think if Arraez can get going here this afternoon, and I like that he got a hit on Saturday afternoon, the last at bat, I don't care if it was meaningless, I think he's at least the straw that stirs the drink. Would you agree with that, Kyle, that because the offense hasn't clicked yet and they haven't won, I'd be like, all right, let's just see when it does click what it looks like.
I do agree.
Am I too optimistic? I don't know.
I don't think it's too optimistic, but for me, this whole thing is starting and stopping on the mound right now before you even talk about the offense. Now, to me, Bell and Berger are going. I think offensively, a big concern right now is the Marlins have four total extra base hits through three games.
Yep. That's how you avoid double plays.
That is tied for dead last in the league with the St. Louis Cardinals, who have three doubles and a homer. They're the only remaining team without a homer. And what was the big topic of conversation in spring training as it pertained to the offense? Is how they were going to come up with some of the instant offense from last year with the lack of power that Jorge Soler, now, you know, he resides out in San Francisco. But my real concern right now is even before the bottom half of the first inning, is how much length can these starting pitchers give this team? I mean, this is...
And that's where it does start, Kyle. I don't think there's any question about it.
And I don't want to sound doom and gloom at all, because it is just three games, and things can change, okay? But this is unsustainable, getting 4 to 5 innings out of a starting pitcher every night. At some point, it just catches up to you, and I don't care how much depth you have in an organization. That, within in and of itself, is very unsustainable. And with Trevor Rogers going today, I doubt he goes six unless he's extremely efficient. Jesus Luzardo gave you five good innings. He could have given them six. And then after that, A.J. Puck struggled, and it's going to take him a while to become a really good starting pitcher in the big leagues. It's going to take Ryan Weathers a little while to become a really good starting pitcher in the big leagues, and they're probably not going to be as efficient as a seasoned veteran that knows how to be crafty and to pitch and keep a pitch count low. So this is going to be a topic of concern for a long time for this team.
And, Nelly, we had talked about the pitchers that are potentially coming back in Braxton Garrett, Yuri Perez, and Edward Cabrera.
But they're also going to...
But for right now, Nelly, they can't bring them back unless they can at least give 5 or 6 innings. And I think that's another point of discussion here.
Well, it's not just 5 or 6. It's a pitch count. You know, you have to, in my opinion, I don't think you can see them until they're at least 90 to 100 pitches. I'm sorry. It's just because the effects that you're having on your bullpen, you're getting right now 18 to 21 outs, you know, from your bullpen. And that can't happen. You know, even in years past, you're still getting 12 outs out of your bullpen, and that's too much. You know, you can't constantly get 12 outs from your bullpen every single night. Because
bullpen's logged 19 innings in 3 games this weekend.
Right. It's just you can't have that happen.
Friday, yeah.
You can't have that happen. And, you know, I'm not worried. You know, I don't know. I wouldn't say worried about the offense, but it all does begin on the mound. You cannot put your offense behind the eight ball when you don't have a constant power threat in that eight ball, in that lineup. Yes, Berger can go deep and he can give you 30. Jazz has the potential to do the same thing. Bell as well, but you don't
starts,
you know,
on the mound.
You can't continue to try to fight back when you're behind 5 runs all the time. You start picking through, and the next thing you know, you're asking a lot out of your bullpen. You're stretching guys out that aren't used to throwing multiple innings. Next thing you know, they're dropping a 2 or 3 spot on the bullpen, and next thing you know, you're instead of behind by 2, you're behind by 5. So it's a tough go for an offense that can't come back, or can't come back but constantly get put behind the eight ball.
Right.
But this is every single team in baseball. Now, Marcus Stroman yesterday for the Yankees, I just saw he threw 101 pitches. You know, that's an anomaly now because you don't see that out of spring. So
he got hammered for not wanting the ball for opening day, but he really just wanted to stay on schedule.
Right, exactly. I mean, there's a lot that can go into that decision, but you know, teams have their starters, and it all boils down to spring training. So it's almost like, what do you expect?
What do you
expect when you have starters and starting pitching leaving camp at 70 to 75 pitches?
I was going to bring that up, Nelly, and I want to be careful the way that I
say this.
Because it is league-wide, and a lot of this boils down to money, and you're trying to protect young players from getting hurt. But when are we going to go back to a time where at least they're built up to 100 pitches coming out of the spring, because this is already caught up to the Marlins, right? I mean, it's crazy. It's a great question. It's also been proven that if a player is going to get hurt, they're going to get hurt. There's very little that they can do. The difference between 85 and 100 pitches is not the difference in your UCL going, right? Like, I just wonder if we're going to get back to a time where coming out of spring training, guys are built up to throw 100 pitches, because that's a difference in an inning.
Well, I'm every school, I guess you say,
more so old school
on how we did it, and I hate to say when we did it because it's not relevant now.
No, but it is very different.
It is very different. Times have changed. Obviously, money is a big part of it, and analytics is also a big part of it. Now, has analytics gone in and said, "Hey, this is the way we have to treat guys"? I mean, the workload, this thing called, we have to monitor their workload. It's like, when did that ever start? And that's in basketball.
Yep.
Load management. There you go. So it's have analytics come to me or prove to me that what they're doing, as far as now, I'm not talking about strategies on the field and pitches and all that stuff. That's a whole different story. Come to me and say the way they treat position players and pitchers as far as their workload and load management in spring training, how that works in the beginning of the year. How does that work in April? Tell me that this is successful, because obviously, and it's league-wide, it's not successful.
Right.
Because now you're talking, and I'm a former bullpen guy, and I'm down there looking at it. If I'm in that bullpen, I'm like, my goodness, we're getting our butts worn out. And if you're getting worn out in April, what's that going to mean in August and September?
Well, that's ultimately going to lead to injuries in the bullpen. And I think, just to be clear, Stephen, too, back to what I was saying.
Yep.
Let's see what this looks like 2 to 3 times through the rotation.
Right.
Yep.
But it's going to get very concerning if in 2 to 2.5, 3 weeks you look at the Rolodex here and take a look at the first 15 games of the season, and maybe Lizardo's the only guy that's given you six. Maybe somebody else has given you 5 2/3, but you will be able to compare very quickly the amount of work the bullpen has logged to start the season.
But
and
look
that's
at
where
it catches
up to.
Look at it in the past when Sandy was doing that. Sandy was your only guy that was going 6, 7, 8, giving you in a complete game, and everybody else was going 5. So in years past, your bullpen was being burned out. And it's nothing. And this is just how they do it. You know, I'm not, okay, 0-3. Nobody's pushing the panic button. This team, I think, can turn this thing around and win some ball games. It's just a matter of, you know, the starting pitching. But, you know, to me, you know, you watch the last couple outings, and I know it's frustrating for everyone when they're reaching their pitch count in 2 or 3 innings, and it's tough.
Yeah, let's see what it looks like once they settle in a little bit, but it's certainly going to be a topic of conversation.
Now, there has been some positives. Jake Berger is smashing the cover off the ball again, recording on a Sunday. As of right now, he's 6-for-11. He's batting .585 with 5 RBIs. Josh Bell, Kyle mentioned, has come off to a pretty good start. He's getting on base. Tim Anderson with a couple of hits as well. There has been some positives out of the bullpen. Declan Cronin, that was an inspiring Thursday night to come out and pitch the 9th, 10th, and 11th. I know he gave up the run, or rather the 10th, 11th, and 12th. I know he gave up the run in the 12th. But there has been some positives. What has stuck to you guys, at least, to like, okay, this can play?
I would say that spring training means absolutely nothing. And look at Jake Berger.
Right, and just like Skip Schumacher says, I mean, you have to take spring training numbers with a grain of salt. Some use it, and it is rightfully so, for young guys to try to make a team. You're like, hey, this guy had a really good spring. Let's give him a shot at the big league level and see what he does when it's for real. You know, Jake Berger, I'm sure, probably didn't panic at all during the season. I mean, during spring training, he just wanted to put together some good at-bats. He knew exactly what he needed to do. A lot of veterans know that. You know, it's very nice to see that he got off to a great start, because who knows when all of a sudden you struggle in spring and then all of a sudden that carries over to the regular season, how guys respond. But yeah, you know, I like the defense. I think they play very good defense. I really like Tim Anderson at shortstop. Yes, there's a lot of positives. And as soon as they can get their starting pitching worked out, and some of it's mechanical, some of it's mental. I mean, you look at Puck the other day, you know, mechanically wise, he was off, but also mentally, when you start aiming the ball, then that's all of a sudden you start messing with your head. Weathers has a great arm. It didn't seem to me that it was mental. It's just a lot of mechanical problems and issues that he had yesterday that easily can be corrected, because Mel Stoudemire Jr. is such a great pitching coach. So, you know, it's 0-3. It's a long season, and yes, they're in a tough division. But I think things will turn around. But you talked about the three guys that are going to come back. You can't bring them back until they're at 95, 100 pitches.
Because they would almost serve as just long relief.
Right.
Look, in my thing, I just want to see what this looks like in a couple of weeks. Right. I enjoy doing this on Sunday, Stephen. It's like, but you know, how much can we really dive into what we've seen after three games? It's reactionary.
Exactly.
Absolutely. Fans
will hit the panic button. You know, looking forward to doing it next Sunday. Let's see what it looks like next Sunday when we're in St. Louis, right? Let's see how they're playing. See what it looks like the following Sunday after they come home against the New York Yankees and take on the Atlanta Braves, right? Like, that's then your a sample size starts to build. You know, the numbers aren't fudged per se. You got 30, 40 at bats. We'll see how you're doing out of the gates. We'll see how the starting pitching is doing.
Now, you look at last year's team. I mean, they had a really bad first half, and next thing you know, they
hovering around .500 the first 2 months of the season,
and then they put it together and they made a playoff spot. I would say, and this was, you know, for the majority of teams, you go until about the middle of May. And now maybe even a little further, because the way they treat spring training, and they all of a sudden use April as that second spring training as far as getting guys going and arm strength and working these starters, and their pitch count gets up. So I would even say now maybe the first couple weeks of June to see how, okay, maybe you can gauge where that team is going to be.
Let's see how they play. Now, it is very true. You can bury yourself early if you can't start stacking up a few wins here and there, but I promise you, every team, I don't care how good they are, is going to lose 3 in a row. They'll lose 10 of 16. They'll lose 11 of 20 at some point in the season, and it kind of gets mixed in the washer a little bit. So they're 0-3. They haven't played that great. The starting pitching has struggled. They're trying to find a way to click, and we'll see if they can do it this afternoon.
Win a third, lose a third, and it's the other third.
See what
happens. What are you going to do with
it? Win, everybody's going to win 50 and lose 50. It's what happens in the other 62.
And for that one run record that they had last year, that's not sustainable. That's three wins,
yeah.
Yeah.
And hopefully the offense is simply better that they're not always in one-run games. So there's a lot that goes into it. Let's see how they play this afternoon, and we'll revisit things next Sunday.
I think I agree with you guys. It's way too early to really make any sort of determination on this. Whatever. You're going to go through lulls through the season. Maybe this is just a slow start for a faster finish, whatever it may be. I got one more topic and then a Twitter question that we got that I think is appropriate for what's been going on here. But we'll start with the topic. Max Meyer is going to pitch here tonight. If you're listening to this on Monday, I'm pumped to see Max. Me and Kyle got a chance to sit down with him. He's locked in. He's focused. Nelly, I think he is mature beyond his age. I think he's got a slow heartbeat. I don't know. Did you get a chance to watch him 2 years ago? Were you with the Fish at that time?
Yeah, I saw him a little bit. He does have a really good arm.
And he's got a great slider.
Yeah, and you know what? He makes adjustments on the – he reminds me a little bit of Gallen in a way, because I watched Gallen when he first came up, and he really – not surprised me, but impressed me in – how a young pitcher can all of a sudden look at it and start reading swings and say, you know what, I don't like how that pitch is going. Or, you know what, this is what this guy's trying to do to me. I'm going to go to another pitch. And he made adjustments in a heartbeat. So it reminded me a little bit of Zach Gallen. And, yeah, I'm excited to see him too. I'm glad that he's up here, and I'm glad he's getting a start and getting the opportunity to prove himself here.
Kyle, what fires you up about seeing Max tonight?
Well, just that he's got a chance to be really good, and he is a firecracker on the mound. And, you know, when we talked to him, I had asked him, or you had asked him, kind of, you know, he gets to a crazy place on the mound, and he really doesn't care who he's facing. Like, that's cool to me. I'm excited to watch him face Mike Trout on Monday and kind of pitch fearless, and he will go right after him. And maybe Trout gets the best of him, and, you know, he took Corbin Burns deep on opening day in Baltimore, but he won't back down from anybody. And I'm also very intrigued by how they're going to operate with him this summer. He's probably going to be capped around a little over 100 innings, maybe 110, 120. Do they let him pitch like a normal starting pitcher out of the gate, and then he's done at the All-Star break for the year? Or is it 4 to 5 innings, and you're going to ask a lot out of the bullpen to stretch him through August and maybe even into September a little bit? So that's going to be interesting for me to watch as well.
All right, our Twitter poll question will end on this. Hi, guys. I was at all three games, and I don't boo Avi Garcia. I'm cheering hard for him. I just want you guys to break down to me where the struggles are coming from. He's hitting the ball hard, but it's going right into the ground. I know Nelly was a pitcher, but is it more mental, age, or his approach?
I can't speak to that, Nelly. I mean, you play that.
Can you speak to that now?
I think a lot of it is mental. You know, as a player, you know, I can't say, hey, you know, don't boo players, because you're going to get booed. I mean, fans don't understand that you're not going to be 100% or 100%.
You should get worried when they stop booing.
All the time. But that'll never happen. But, you know, I think a lot of it's mental. You know, I mean, obviously he's not the young Garcia that he was when he was with the Tigers. I mean, I really liked him. He reminded me of almost like a Cabrera.
He was
type.
A mini Miggy.
And, you know, he had such talent. And because of injuries, you know, that takes a toll on your body. He's here for the next couple of years. You know, I think for him, he has to get over the boos and just forget it and just say, hey, you know what? In a lot of ways, if you fail, you just look at yourself in the mirror and I'm booing myself. You know, I should have gone out there and done a great job, or I need to be a better player. I'm booing myself along with the fans. And you just accept it. And, you know, it's funny because Reggie Jackson, Ellis is a little bit different. Reggie Jackson said they just don't boo anyone, right?
They don't boo nobody.
Exactly.
That's
so
what
if
I'm
you
saying.
Get
Once
booed,
they stop booing them, maybe he should be worried. They care about Avi Garcia.
So if you get booed, they obviously know who you are and they expect a lot out of you. And, yeah, he signed the big deal here. So obviously the fans expect a lot out of him, and it just hasn't worked out so far since he's been here. And mentally, that's a tough thing right now. You know, players are a little bit more sensitive, I think, than in past. But for him, he still has the talent, and, you know, he's healthy now. So, you know, he just has to get over what the fans are thinking, and hopefully that's all behind him.
Here's the only thing I'll say about the Avi Garcia situation. I think the conversation has to stop about, are they just going to let him go?
It's not happening.
He's owed $29 million a buyout 2 years from now. They need Avi Garcia to be a good baseball player here, and he can contribute. And, again, it's three games. Like, let's
if he hits a home run today, that's going to be forgotten.
I know he's played himself, but
and he's played himself into a platoon situation. Now, for a guy that's used to getting so many at-bats, 400 or 500 at-bats, that's not going to happen.
Nope.
Let's just see.
They're
going
to platoon him with Sanchez, so that's that's another thing that a veteran guy has a hard time adjusting to. So it's not an excuse, but now he has to figure that out. He has to figure, hey, what can I do to stay hot? What can I do to stay in a good rhythm? Because I know I'm only playing part-time.
Well, and hopefully – and what he also needs to understand, and I'm sure he does. I'm sure we're not saying anything he doesn't know. They're trying to put him in conducive situations to allow him to be successful if he's not going to be an everyday player. So he is not going anywhere, I don't think. He's owed way too much money. He can still be a very productive ball player, and he can help this team win games in 2024.
Yeah,
so we'll see what happens. It's just way, way, way too early right now.
Remember when Trey Turner was struggling with Philly, Nelly? Do you remember that and what they did for him?
Well,
at Citizens Bank Park, a round of applause on his first at bat. I mean, I don't know how stupid this thing can get, but that obviously kickstarted Trey Turner. I don't know how desperate
different
that sounds.
Different market.
Fans have the right to boo. I mean, they're going to boo. They're going to cheer. You know, it's as a player, this is part of being a baseball player or an athlete. They're going to do it in every single sport. So it's just one of those things that hey. You know what? I'm booing myself. I know I should be better, and I got to go out. And obviously he is. He probably works his butt off. I'm sure he does. And so it's not the lack of effort.
He don't want to be bad. He don't want to get booed. Nobody does. He'll be all right.
All right, guys. Good stuff. As always, you can find our podcast, Long Tossin', on marlins.com. And then you can also go to the podcast page, Twitter, or X at Marlins Radio. Long Tossin', Marlins Rewind. Thanks for joining us. And as always, this is the Marlins Radio Network, driven by AutoNation.